Yes, hello and welcome. Kick off the shoes. Put up your feet. It's another one of these, and worst one in a while, I think. In a year where it has been 33 games, full of rock bottoms, game five of the season, I said out loud that getting a no-hit by a 30-year-old journeyman, I mean, the good news is that's got to be rock bottom. And then a couple more rock bottoms. And this Sunday, a really big-time rock bottom, blown apart to fall. I mean, listen, we're very early in the year. Again, 34 games into the season, but it's May, and the timeline on this team, which I'll get into in a little bit, is coming up in a way that when I take a step back and look at it all, I'm like, man, it sure feels like, I think it feels if you're watching the game colloquially, and maybe I'm projecting, it feels like there's a tenseness around the team. It feels like there's an urgency. It feels like a panic. And maybe that's just the way that we're watching it because things are so high wire right now and the whole thing is seemingly crumbling in front of us and we're saying this is a disaster. They're 16 and 19, very early. The playoff odds are still in the double digits. Lots of baseball to go, right? Lots and lots and lots. Triple digit number games. Whole season samples per player number games. But, you know, it's going to be June, and then it's going to be July, and then it's going to be decision time on the direction they're going. And this year, that's a lot bigger conversation than I think it was in any of the years past. I think it's pretty clear, you know, with the way that everything is heading up to the same moment, the way all the contracts are structured, the way the competitive window is balanced, the availability for the core pieces, and the prime timelines for all these guys, it all sort of comes to a fine point. And this coming deadline is an early fork in the road decision point for them to decide which of the paths they're going down. I'm sure you're feeling it in your friendship groups and your group chats and the conversations you're having with people. I have been guilty in the past of being loudmouth a little bit and being too, you get a little caught up in the moment of it. And we've been crude in the past to the management group and the front office. And I remember before they signed Springer, being like, there's no evidence that they're going to ever try. And listen, I don't think it's for a lack of effort, but it's a results-oriented business and things go the way they go. We talked about this the last two off seasons, I think, where the thing with the moves is you're going move for move and saying individually, don't really dislike any of it. But you start to build a really big body of evidence that it's not enough, or you keep saying timing, and then it happens for a really long amount of time, and you don't get to just say the click into motion and the smooth operation is right around the corner. And in the meantime, well, we've waited for that because, you know, there was some understanding of it last year, and coming into this year was that it worked fairly well last year. Ultimately, like, it was not the most fun thing to do, and I know we've had our hands over our eyes most of the season. They got themselves into the playoffs, and they went into the playoffs with pitching and defense as the foundation, and the belief that, you know, it's all timely hitting anyway. And then came into this year sort of saying that exact same conversation, only over a bigger period. And it sure feels like now that we're here, what we're looking at, and we have some results that are not great, the bullpen and the pitching depth, which are the bedrocks, you know, bound to hit skids because they're asking them to be perfect every single game. And then they finally don't ask them to be perfect. Oh boy. This is what makes it so frustrating. On Sunday, they're like, okay, you don't have to be perfect. Just get out there. We'll give you a ton of runs. We'll give you 8 runs of support. And it happens to be the Alek Manoah test spot against a 500 Nationals team, and it just doesn't quite work. And some big questions coming, some big conversations. And a lot of things coming to a head. And listen, again, wanna steadfastly as I can before I go into the way I feel about what's happening right now and what is going to happen in the next little bit, is that I, from the conversations that I've had with a lot of people, feel like I believed in the team more than a lot of people. I understand what they're doing here. I understand what the build is, what the concept is. And when it works, it does give you a way to watch it, to go see. Like, Dalton Varsho is a great example, where it's like, if you watch the first month of the season, there's like three or four, maybe even five games where, like, combined between the defensive plays that he makes in center field and some of the catches he makes in big spots, as well as going on a little hot streak and hitting some home runs, it's like, man, he pretty much single-handedly wins them five games. It could be a lot worse without Dalton Varsho somehow. And sort of like understanding and appreciating, Berríos has been so great, and Gausman is such a good pitcher, and Bassett, after starting rocky, continues to be like a guy you turn to. You see a model for, like, over a full season, you call it long-term success, but over the big picture, saying that's gonna average out in our favor. We have enough talented guys going our way. But the evidence has mounted, and coming into this trade deadline, coming into June, coming into July, it's going to be put up or shut up time for the experiment, unfortunately. Whether I believe that if they gave them 3 seasons of runway to build like this, one time they would go on a run. Everything comes to a head at the end of next season for the most part, right? That's your Vladdy and Bo free agency. That's your a lot of your pitching contracts. Kikuchi goes this year. I believe Bassett goes either this year or next. That's two of your four reliable guys. You have Berríos and Gausman locked up, but they might be your highest trade value guys at this point. Anyway, all this is to say, number one, is I feel like they are going to fire John Schneider soon. Because just with the way he's talking and the way he's sort of changed, you can see this year if you're following the quotes. He has already tried like four different approaches. He has tried the, like, we need to sit back and we know what's going to happen. He has tried the, we have veterans on this team. He has tried the, okay, now I'm drawing a line and it has to start working from here on out. He's tried all the clubs in his bag, is sort of how I feel about the managerial quotes. And a couple other small things beyond just the quotes, beyond just the results. A telling small thing. They played Seattle and Cal Raleigh. Of course it's Cal Raleigh. Cal Raleigh says, yeah, nobody in the league likes John Schneider anyway. Everyone thinks he's an asshole. And nobody that I can remember on the team was like, that's not true. Did any player come out and say John Schneider isn't an asshole that everybody hates? Did that happen? Did I miss the quote? That's not good. That's not good. And one of the common things I hear as a rebuttal to this, and we'll get into that as well, is the front office won't get to fire that many coaches, right? It's three. They go Gibby to which is like lame duck, but Gibby to Montoyo to Schneider. Four coaches over the tenure is a little, or managers, pardon me, over the tenure is a little much. Those are the 2 points against it. The other great talking point, and my favorite one, this goes for Guillermo Martinez as well. And I am a suburban father. I am just these takes just come to me sometimes, and I do everything I can to fight them off. And then you realize, sometimes leaning into these works too, because you're often as right as you were as you took the analytical bent. The one of the arguments against firing Schneider and Guillermo Martinez, it's one of my favorite things. Guillermo especially gets this one. There's two arguments against it. They say it's not like they're telling them to be bad. Sure, I hope not. And it won't make a difference whether they're there or not. And listen, I hate, there's maybe no thing that people do in bad faith sports conversations than say, well, imagine your workplace. And in general, that doesn't work here ever. When pertaining to the athletes, however, but a manager is just a guy with an office job. He's just a guy in an office that another guy in an office comes in and talks to. And listen, performance review being nothing would change whether I was here or not. That's a bad performance review. That's bad. That's bad. And they're not telling them to do poorly talking point. It's like, well, they are doing poorly though. So what they're telling them is resulting in that. And listen, I don't know if that's necessarily fair. I'm just trying to tell you what I think is going to happen. Understand what I'm saying? I'm not necessarily thinking that's the right thing to do, but that's what I think's going to happen. It sure feels like John Schneider is fired, frankly, to me. And it's silly, yeah. And I don't know, is the replacement another guy hiring from within? They're just going to do that again? I don't think so. But also, you don't generally want to do a managerial search in May, June. But you're ending up doing a lot of things you don't want to do in May, June, right now. And again, time to pull out of this. But one of those counterpoints that I sort of skip past is the front office doesn't get to change four managers. And generally, no, they don't. And they did extend John Schneider after the 8-1 blown lead to Seattle. I hate to do this, but boy, this is leafy, isn't it? Isn't this leafy? Isn't this not exactly what's happening to the Leafs? That you have this core that you're told is the most talented core you've seen in a generation, and you just give the team to a coach with no experience. And then you're shocked when they fall apart in the high-pressure situations. And it just so happens to be the same guy that they all played with in the minors, and that's the only thing on their resume, basically. It's like, oh, they helped our generational talents go from teenagers to men. I would famously hate hearing from the same guy at 25 as I did 19, and that's the whole qualification. Which I'm talking about both teams there. So, yeah, a lot of times front offices don't get the opportunity to put four managers behind the bench. They totally do not. And I'm not saying it's going to make sense. I'm just telling you what I think is going to happen, the lever I think they're going to pull. Because what else are they going to do? What else are they going to do? And I'll tell you what else they could do. And I'll tell you what else I am like heard offhand from somebody mentioned to me, somebody that's very level-headed, not a random commenter, last name, bunch of numbers. But you sort of have to take a long look in the mirror and ask about what you're doing with Ross Atkins here, don't you? And again, I'll repeat it, because I said it already, I want to say 5, 6 minutes ago, that in general, I look at Ross's record and I see great extensions for pitchers. I think the Barrios contract, had they have turned around, is sort of like, we got a great pitcher out of this and we have him for a long time, and that works for us. Gausman was a great deal. Letting go of Ray was a great deal. All the 1-year contracts we know about already, the ones in 2021, the ones last year, Turner this year. He's done a great job with those pieces. But, and you're free to disagree with me on this, but I think this is correct. I think most people, even the most conservative, even the most level-headed, would say if the Jays miss the playoffs this year, Ross Atkins is going to lose his job. Yes? You're nodding along? And we're agreeing that we're being as reasonable as we can be with patience there, right? We're saying it's been 9 years. At that point, it's been 9 seasons. Coming into year 10, the 2015 hostile takeover. And by the way, he finds himself in the exact same situation that Alexanthopoulos may have been in at the time. Is sort of anyway, if we all agree that he is gone, if they miss the playoffs, how can you let him do the deadline? Like, frankly, there's a direction here that we talked about and is pretty clear. If they're fifth in the East and they're, I don't know, double-digit games back of the division lead, which they probably would be, because that's just the division that they play in. You know, a team is going to run away with it. Two teams might run away with it. You know, Baltimore and New York. They're already 7.5 back. Again, a lot of baseball to go, but if they're 8, 9, 10 back, and they're, what are they right now? They're 4 back of the wild card, the second wild card. Let's say that they're still there, right? And we are giving one of those bum teams in the West a place at the table, Seattle or Texas, who's winning the division. Baltimore, New York, almost certainly, right? So that's, now we have two wild cards. Running out of space, right? So now it's another one of the West teams, and the Central teams, the Twins, the Guardians, the Royals, all playing fairly well. So say they're 4 back, and there's a 3 or 4 other teams in the hunt with them, and they're not in that second wild card spot, a month and a half from now. right? Just literally being trying to be reasonable here and saying in June 17th, June 24th, July 1st, a month out of the deadline, they're still back there. There's two paths, right? There's the loading up and recognizing that the window of this team is now and tomorrow, and absolutely going crazy and doing whatever you can, emptying the already empty spaces, trading all your future pieces to make a short-term deal. And if that's the move, do you want the guy who's GMing for his life, GMing for his job, handling that? And maybe you say, no, I guess not. Maybe they are looking at this and saying we should soft sell or sell, right? So you were looking at offers for Kikuchi, right? For a top rental pitcher. You're looking at offers on Turner. You're looking at offers on Jimmy Garcia, probably. Kevin Kiermaier, likely. There's your soft sell, right? You are getting rid of all those sort of side pieces, giving all those, Turner becomes Spencer Horowitz, and you're just fully committing to like nobody, not going to win. Are you giving that keys to the guy that you're keeping around, and you're saying go ahead and soft sell or soft buy, and just stock the cupboard for somebody else because we're firing you when you don't make the playoffs. Because you're selling. Or there's hard sell. There's Gausman. There's Berríos. There's, hell, I'll say it, Bo Bichette. There's Vlad. I don't think they would, but your bigger pieces, your real pieces, your foundation, you're going to charge the guy who you're firing with that? There's not a lot of roads that make sense to have Ross Atkins at the helm, other than holding and seeing how it goes. And that might be what they do. That might be what they do. But if you were looking for them to take any big actions, it sure feels like Ross Atkins isn't going to be the one to do it. I don't know how it can be. I don't know how you can follow the, I guess, again, the soft sell. Maybe you let Ross handle that and say he gets value in deals. Let's see him get value as a seller. I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough spot to be in, man. Jansen is another one. Jansen's another guy, unfortunately, that you would look at and say there's a rental piece if you really needed to do it. The guy that I think most people want to lock up, and I don't know of any catcher knocking down the door behind him. I think Jansen's a guy you lock up, but that's trouble, man. They're in some real trouble. Not been good. Not been good. We had a lot of stuff happen since the last time we had the mics on. We had the whole Vladdy discourse happen and then quell down, which I'm sort of glad to stay out of. There's just so much bigger problems than Vladdy. I know that he's a lightning rod, and he's been still. There's this two things, right? There's the camp that's like, oh, you're not satisfied that he's 52nd best hitter in the league last year, and no, you're right to not feel satisfied. But I think. And we were guilty of this in the past as well. Sort of like the whole problem with the team is Vlad not performing. And right now they have so many problems worse than that. They have so many problems worse than that. The bullpen is the worst in baseball. And it's not one of those things where it's not 2021 where you come into it and you say, well, you have no bullpen and it's not going to perform. They had good pieces that pitched well last year. And it's just they had some injuries, they had some unfortunate situations with the springs that some of the important guys got, and the rest of it is how bullpens work. Chad Green is been a guy that's missed a lot of time. They put a bet on, and you can, it's one of those things you say, oh man, well, tough break. Chad Green is out again. It's like that was the risk of signing Chad Green. That's what the risk is, right? And the fifth pitcher slot depth that I admittedly waved off. Yariel came in, pitched fairly well, injured. Bowden Francis came in and pitched poorly, injured. Mitch White came in, pitched poorly, waved twice already. And all of a sudden, like, Wes Parson's gone. Paolo Espino, clearly not. All of a sudden, that's what, how many guys did I just name? Another five guys for the fifth starter? And we're back to Manoah, who's not ready. And the whole thing is built around the pitching being perfect, right? The whole thing is built around how good Berríos has been. 1.44 ERA in seven games. Still losing sometimes because he makes one bad pitch a game. It's crazy. Kikuchi's been unbelievable. You say Kikuchi has been unbelievable through seven starts. That's the 1-2 punch. Bassett, Gausman have been up and down. They've had their moments, but continue to be linchpins. You're lucky to have those four guys. And this is where the tip of the iceberg that, you know, all the optimism and all the belief I have in that, like, there's a way to win games in this roster. I don't know if it's enough to win games consistently. They've actually, even with the bullpen and the fifth starter depth issues, they've still been lucky with injuries. The four pitchers that matter still have all made seven starts. And that's that little piece that if that chips off, it's real trouble here. It's real trouble here because the hitting questions, runners in scoring position continues to be a thing. Falling behind in any game is just, it's just the absolute garbage to watch when they fall behind. When they fall behind three, the game is over. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's like they want the game to end. It's really, and again, I'm saying it's like, because I know that's not how people are wired, but holy geez, to the competitive nature of the at-bats, completely bottom out. It's unbelievable. Jansen's been great. Kirk has been claw my eyes out bad. I'm sorry, at the plate and running the bases. Vlad hit that grand slam yesterday, and if he didn't, the fact that Kirk didn't score on the ball beforehand, that's like bloop single, that he is running on the moment it gets hit and still doesn't take the risk of rounding third and scoring on a ball that gets thrown into second. I was like, oh my God, if they don't hit a grand slam here and they only score one, they end up blowing the game anyway, but geez. My card's on the table. He's a great framer. Really struggle watching him hit and run the bases. I'm sorry. Kevin Biggio, we're in a cold Kevin Biggio. We know it. We've seen it. He came out of the gate really hot. He'll play well again later in the year. Right now, it's not there. Bo Bichette, who was the final edition of 40 and 30, where it was just glowing, and it was like no matter what happens, we know Bo is gonna be good and work hard. Has a special gift, I think, similar to Vladdy, with like when he looks bad, it looks really bad. He has got a 530 OPS, and league wide OPS is down. 530 is below that. That's about as bad. Like that's worse than Kirk. It's about as bad as Kevin Kiermaier, who like didn't get a hit for the first, I don't even know, week and a half of the season. And the rest of it is sort of like by design, right? Like that I'm talking about Kirk and Biggio and Bichette. Springer is, it's trouble. It's just trouble, man. It's going to have to be I'm trying to tell myself, it's like I have to start looking at George differently as a different player. I still want him to be the sits back foot, cranks fastball kind of guy. I think his only way forward to not be absolute, like, bottom of the barrel dirt contribution for this team is to become like a traditional old school leadoff hitter and just battling and fouling balls off and slashing to right field. I think it's going to have to be who he is versus the best version of him. That's sort of the right-handed Kevin Kiermaier is like to make it such a point. There's a lot of problems in those places. There's bright spots. David Schneider is a baseball player that should be in the lineup every day. I think that's become clear, especially as Biggio falls off. Schneider's great. A guy that you keep around whenever you're going through next. Varsho, I said it off the top, but it's like has single-handedly made such a difference already in so many games. I love him. He's my favorite player on the whole team. He's been great, and it's been great to see. Jansen's the best power bat they have without a lot of difference. And, like, I don't even hate the Vlad thing. It's like there's so many. I've listed 25 minutes of bigger problems than Vlad right now. I just think, like, yeah, I'd like more. I want him to be elite. I want him to be an MVP. I want him to carry the team. But, you know, the team around it right now is so bad that I don't even know that great Vlad would pull me out of how bad I feel the situation they're in. just feel like they're in a really bad situation. As I've outlined, I don't know the direction that they're going, but I feel like they're going to have to choose that direction very soon. I feel like it's, you know, as mentioned, the window, the way this whole thing is built around ends next year. But this trade deadline, if they're out of it, that's a real fork in the road decision-making time, because it feels like there's an opportunity there to be really stark in the decision-making. Maybe soft sell, maybe some of that soft sell stuff is a more accurate depiction of the way that it would go. I do think Kikuchi is a good rental starting pitcher for some team. Always use it. And then any good bullpen guy, which is sort of the standard operating procedure. And your 1 year contract deal veterans. You're able to get Justin Turner to a good team. You're able to get Kiermaier to a team that needs an extra outfielder. Hopefully it doesn't come to that, right? We're hoping it turns around, but it's starting to feel a little bit like you're watching and you know, you've already seen it. It's been a little bit like reruns recently, which is a shame, because I was, when they were playing like fairly well, like they weren't even great, but they had a decent stretch before this last little bit, before we got caught up in the Vladdy discourse, before that got all bad. They had that nice little stretch where they won, was it six of seven or 7 of 8 right before the losing streak against the Royals and the Dodgers. It was like, yeah, you know what? This is pretty good. They're scoring 5 runs a game and winning games 5-4, 5-0, 5-3, 5-2, 5-1, like just sort of getting out there and getting enough done, 2 big hits and winning games. And then they just like, when they score one or two is not enough. And it's so funny, when they brought Barger up, when Kiermaier went out, was the immediate, like, the difference that why they have the outfield defense they have, right? Is they, you misplay one or two balls, and all of a sudden it's like, well, now you can't. The pitching staff isn't designed to be pitching from behind. It isn't designed to be giving up any runs at all. And when you've made that trade-off, you really put this offense in a situation that they are not equipped to handle. Any little miscue defensively really stands out. That was a part of the early runs that, you know, we saw Manoa give up yesterday. Just like any little miscue, it's really hard for that, especially that fifth slot and right now the bullpen. It's really hard for them to battle through and get through some of this stuff. It's going to be really challenging on them. They're playing, it really feels like over the next month and a half, the next 2 months, they are like playing for this core to even be a thing. This really feels like an important point. But also, again, come back down to earth before we go. We'll come back down to earth. 16-19. Boy, that's a lot of baseball. That's 120 plus games left. Not good at math. Don't hold me to that. It's a lot of baseball. And there's a lot of ways forward to be good as well. It's not, all was not lost. But this being in this situation in a month and a half, in 2 months, is going to be decision time. They're not there yet. I'm just looking forward and feeling nervous. And that's them in, been the situation they put us in with the play recently. But deep breaths, lots of baseball to go. And if you believe they were good, as I said, 2 weeks ago, if you believe they were good on April 22nd, you should believe they're good now. And I believe they were good on April 20th. I'll tell you, when they had won the first 2 games against San Diego, my biggest complaint was that they could never sweep, right? They couldn't sweep the Yankees, couldn't sweep Colorado, couldn't sweep Seattle, couldn't sweep San Diego. As little as 2 weeks ago, that was the biggest problem, is there's no sweeps. It's been rocky. It's been bad. And, you know, you're looking at a Kansas City, Washington part of the schedule, and you believe that you should have taken some games, because now it's Philly, Minnesota, Baltimore, Tampa. You get Chicago at the end of the month, so you'll survive. You get Chicago twice, 6 times in 10 games. That's pretty good. Deep breaths. But proving time is coming. This is the pinch I think we're all feeling. The proving ground time is coming. Anyway, shout out to our man Jake. Jake is moving this week. Very, very, very busy and emotionally draining time. And my son, my two-year-old, transitioning to big boy bed. We had to take the railing down in the crib. And he is able to just get out of bed instead of like having to like jump around on the inside and then fall asleep. He's able to just get up and walk out of the room, which he is doing and directing traffic in there. So been some hectic and impossible to predict timing late nights. So, you know, that's life, and that's ball. And that's another episode of Less Than Jace. Thank you for coming along for the ride. We'll be back at it next week before everything happens, right? Okay, we have a week of peace and then everything happens. I think that is how it is going to go. Thank you, as always, for being a part of Less Than Jace.